Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. All right, everybody, let's take a minute and welcome Mike Collins to the show. He's the founder of sugaraddiction.com. You guys know about my personal struggles with sugar and food and all that good stuff. So let's welcome Mike to the show and learn a little bit about him. Mike, thanks so much for coming on and doing this with me.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor. I love talking to the recovery community. I'm a recovering guy myself. So, and sugar just happens to be part of the process for me anyway.
Actually, that is the truth. It's a part of it for most of us, I think. So why don't you take a minute and just tell the audience a little bit about you and exactly what it is that you do?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, I've been in recovery from drugs and alcohol for 35 years, but my mom was a sugar junkie. She loved the stuff and she always had a stash. We knew where it was. But, you know, I started to realize that, you know, my friends around recovery, they were gaining weight really fast. Like they 90 days clean and 20 pounds later. And then it started to get worse with diabetes and that kind of stuff. So I started looking at it in my early days of recovery and kind of realized that sugar and flour and probably caffeine was for the other. And when I look back on it, in hindsight, it was reversed. I used sugar worse than a junkie before I started drinking or drugging. And then afterwards, I just returned to it, basically. I didn't really drink I didn't use that much sugar. Didn't have as much of a sweet tooth when I was drinking. But afterwards, it just came like with a vengeance. So then I started to put two and two together. You know, I audited a few food meetings. And I started to realize that, you know, I started doing studies. Now, we're going back 30 years. I've been sugar-free for 30 years. But there wasn't any real, like there is now, research and that kind of stuff. So I just started studying it and, you know, I took it on abstinence from that stuff years ago. And then I went on to have a regular business career and life and kids and raised a couple of sugar-free kids, which is another story if you want to talk about it. But, and then about 10 years ago, I grabbed the domain sugaraddiction.com and I started putting out really good information, but few people would take it and run with it. But about 3 years ago, I went almost full time and we started having groups and support stuff. And that's when the thing took off. That's when it really was the magic, just like any kind of peer support or support meetings. That's what turned the tide. So, and that's what I've been doing since then.
What do you find is people's biggest struggle with sugar or quitting sugar even? I mean, I think we all understand like how we misuse it or just like emotional eating. You know, I definitely fall into that trap. But what do you see as people's biggest struggle in walking away from it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's a fair question in that I think it's social to a large degree. It's been enculturated so deeply and there's no ramifications to give it to a baby at one. There's no guilt. There's no worry. You can give a child this product. So people don't really grasp, and it's changing now in the last 4 or 5 years with the research, but people just don't, and they can't envision, like people coming into recovery of any kind, they ask the big question, do I have to do this for the rest of my life? Is abstinence, 100% abstinence, required to change my world around sugar? And I don't know if you want me to answer that question, it might scare off half your audience, but the bottom line is you have to look at it. And I think what's happening now is they are beginning to give credence. And people in dusty church basements in the food recovery meetings have known this anecdotally for years. And now science is proving it, that some folks that can, I mean, I know I can't have one glass of wine and I know I can't have just one cookie either because I'm off on a run at that point. So people are treating it more like a substance use disorder than a, you know, like a diet or a lifestyle change, a health change.
Yeah. It is fascinating because I think
I think some of those professionally, what we call process addictions, right? Like drugs and alcohol, substance addictions, they have a physical component, right? When I stop it, I'm going to have a withdrawal. Process addictions are some, you know, sex, gambling, disordered eating, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of those, sometimes to me, they seem much more challenging because your triggers are everyday life things, right? Like, it's not a big deal for me to not have a drink of alcohol. I can avoid alcohol if I need to or want to. But avoiding sugar is far more difficult because it's kind of hidden in so many things. And certainly food, right? Like, I mean, what a challenge to have an addiction where you were kind of forced to moderate. Like, I feel like I would die if somebody tried to make me moderate alcohol.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of evidence, obviously. You've probably known a lot of people that tried that. And the main thing, you know, 75% of the food system, the food boxes, bags, cans, cellophane, whatever, they all have, 75% of the stuff on the shelves has sugar in it, which is an incredibly high number when you think about it. And so there is, I would proffer to say, a way to split apart whole food that you get from the outside of the grocery store, fruits, vegetables, meat, seafoods, you know, dairy, whatever, then the stuff in the middle of the grocery store. And that is the how you stay away from it. That's how you obtain abstinence. And sadly, for a lot of folks, and me in the early days, you have to learn how to cook a little bit. You can't risk it at a restaurant. You can't. And once you get a little bit of abstinence, you start to realize that you have to, you know, there is an eternal vigilance to it, like any other recovery.
Yeah. It's much like alcohol too, in that it's everywhere. And just like you said, that it being socially acceptable and so deeply ingrained in us as people. I mean, sugar is some of my earliest memories, you know, like baking pies with my grandmother and things like that. Some of my earliest memories in my life. Like, that's deep, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my mom genuinely, it's an interesting story. I think I tell it, but I don't think it's different than a lot of folks. Is her mother died when she was 8 years old. And, you know, my grandfather had to move in with her sister in order to make ends meet and whatever. And, but his cousin owned the country store across the way. So he made this little deal with her that anytime my mother came across the road and wanted something from the candy thing, just give it to her and he would put it on my grandfather's account. So my mother, like, she genuinely believed that sugar was love for children, for herself. And, you know, it was like ingrained in her. And that's how we bonded with, like you say, with making I remember to this day, chocolate chip oatmeal cookies. I mean, I can remember the bowl. It was gigantic, you know? And so I think a lot of us grew up the exact same way.
Interesting, too. I think back on, you know, I was a kid in the 70s, and I was talking to my mom and my father about this actually not very long ago. And I said, you know, it's so strange to me when I think back when I was a kid, because we didn't eat healthy. You know what I mean? Everything, the beginning of every meal started with some sort of grease, you know, it was bacon grease or Crisco or something. I mean, we were not healthy eaters.
Right.
But the odd thing is that I did not know hardly any overweight people when I was a kid, right? Nobody was overweight. We didn't have overweight kids at school. Like, it was almost non-existent. And it made me very curious, like, what has changed at this point where obesity is such a big issue, especially in the United States. And I think because everything we ate when I was a kid was made from scratch.
Sure.
There were no preservatives, even though it wasn't healthy cooking or healthy food necessarily. It was just fresh. And what they, which is a whole new market now called organic. When I was a kid, it was just food.
Right, exactly. No, you're right. I mean, it's same with me. I mean, there was only one or two overweight kids in the whole school. And, you know, the exact timing, the 70s and 80s, is when high fructose corn syrup started. And you can graph it. It's, they run parallel up and to the right. I don't know if I'm doing it right. Up and to the right as far as the growth of high fructose corn syrup in the diet and of the obesity rates. And it was so hidden and people didn't know it. And, you know, it just went right to your liver and creates fat, basically. And it's just not, it can't be processed. Fructose can't be processed anywhere in the body but the liver. It doesn't like burn off. It doesn't get digested or peed out. It has to be processed through the liver. And then its function is to create fat, you know. So the science is proving it out now, but we didn't know that in the 70s and 80s. And that's why it was able to run wild and get where it is.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of manipulation that goes into the food industry also.
You think?
Yeah, in that, you know, things are created to have a certain effect on you and a certain effect on your brain and cause you to want more, crave more, buy more. And I get really irritated with all the manipulation in the world. Like, I get tired of just like every commercial I see, big pharma, tobacco, like all of them. Like, I just get so tired of the manipulation. I get so frustrated with it.
Right.
That almost that spite for me helps me eat better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you need to have a little enemy, you know, and if you want an enemy, here's one. So right now they literally have food scientists on the other side, campuses, big campuses of food scientists whose job, who put you inside an MRI machine, people inside, and see how the product, whatever their product is lighting up the nucleus accumbens, the brain reward chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, the same things that affect alcohol, heroin, any kind of other drug is affecting the nucleus accumbens and the serotonin and dopamine receptors. They're trying to figure out how to use, you know, how to make it. And the big food was bought up by the sugar companies in the 80s, reverse. The sugar companies and the food companies were bought up by the tobacco companies who understood this addiction paradigm and, you know, getting them early and, you know, that, you know, children's cereals. And it's just, it's kind of sad. And I'm not of the ilk of that I want to start a war with those guys because I've always been grassroots. But yes, there, you have to realize who's on the other side of the fence trying to feed you and your kids, you know?
Yeah. And it, I mean, it does help to just make better choices, right? Because I like to view everything kind of from a brain standpoint and how to do it
100%
with my brain. So it's sustainable long term and really teaching myself long term habits and lifestyle change. Can you speak a little bit on that where sugar hits those same receptors that is alcohol, the same receptors as alcohol and drugs do and what the effect of that is?
Absolutely. I mean, this is really the core of my work. This is what I try. Everybody comes to me, they want a food plan and an exercise plan. I'm like, look, there's like going online, there's a lot of that stuff. It's really the base science is the dopamine receptors are called down regulators. They're thinned out, meaning you have less of them from overuse and abuse of drugs and alcohol, sugar, methamphetamines, whatever, cocaine. And you're getting this big dopamine hit, this big dopamine rush from whatever you're ingesting. And we take a little bit of heroin, we take a little bit of alcohol, we take a little bit of cocaine, but we are pounding 20 to 30 teaspoons a day through our body. Your brain is never getting a break. It's always pounding the dopamine. And when it wears off, you have another. When it wears off, you have another. And you just keep pounding it all day, probably since the womb, right? And then you got serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA. These are your reward chemicals. And the science is now very, very clear that these things are affected. And that's the reason you can't quit or stay stopped is because this is a substance use disorder you need to recover from just like any other drug addiction. And you need to be very serious about it. So, I mean, I could go on and wax on about science for the whole time, but suffice it to say that the science in the last 5 years has exploded in this realm, and that it's very, very real, and that sugar is, and I don't, you know, people get on me when I say as powerful. It's the dose makes the poison, right? You're keeping this activated day in and day out, 24/7. Every waking hour, you're ingesting sugar in some way. So your brain just never gets that break. So it is a neurotoxin. It's a poison. And we need to look at it like that. And I hate being the anti-candy man. I hate being that they've got to change. Everybody's got to change an entire culture for 300 years that's been integrated with this from birth to death and every celebration. But when you look at the science, when you look at the reality of where we ended up, then you have to make this conclusion. And the people in recovery, you would think, have a little bit of a leg up, right? That they've already kind of passed through this process. But then, you know, I've got people 5, 10, 15, 20 years sober that they just never put two and two together with the sugar. So I have to kind of be a little bit more forceful with it, you know?
Well, I think just like alcohol, I think conceptually it is really challenging to get to that place that, because it seems overly dramatic, right? When I sit back and think, oh, I can never have sugar again. Mm-hmm. And it just seems insane, right? And it was the same way with alcohol. When I first started realizing it really had a hold on me and it was unhealthy, I remember staring at a drink in a glass and thinking, what the heck, dude? It's a liquid in a glass. Like, who says I can't control it? You know, right. And just conceptually, that's really challenging to grasp that thought. But I think as you get deeper and deeper into it, and it's also different because I think most of us have certain things that we can walk away from pretty easily. And then you'll have a thing or two that is just so difficult, you can't quite grasp it and get to the other side.
Exactly. And that's what it is. It's, we started talking about at the beginning. It's that enculturation for 300 years. It's like, it's just weaved into the fabric of society. And what we didn't put two and two together as we came through it is that a lot of diseases, mental and physical, are caused by it. And people have just relegated it to aging. They think that because this is our society, this is how we move through our society, that we're going to age this way. We're going to become senile. We're going to get diabetes. We're going to get dementia. We're going to get all, you know, our eyes are going to go bad, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's just not true. It's really literally just not true in a lot of cases. And there's right now so much science of reversal of diabetes just by diet. Literally eyesight getting better, skin getting better, brain fog getting better, weight, of course. Look, I don't even hardly even talk about weight, but that's just a beautiful byproduct of it.
Yeah. I read somewhere a long time ago, I don't even remember what it was, but this one phrase just always stood out to me. And it said, sugar feeds cancer.
Oh, my God.
And I was,
I don't know if you mentioned, later. I mean, this guy's name is Lewis Cantley. Okay. He doesn't work at Cornell. He has a lab at Cornell, like the Cantley lab at Cornell, right? And he's been on three of my summits. So it's Quit Sugar Summits, right? I interviewed all the biggest guys in the world, right? And he's like, can you say that again, Dr. Cantley? I need it for a sound bite. It said, sugar causes cancer, Michael. Sugar causes cancer. He said it again. One more time. I want to get the sound bite. Sugar causes cancer, right? And it's like, so it's not me, you know, it's not me just experiencing it with people and whatever. It's Cornell, Harvard, these guys are telling me these, that's true. What you said is absolutely true.
Yeah. That's a great thing to keep top of mind when I catch myself wanting to slide back into the trap of sugar. It's quite a journey, you know, really figuring it all out and figuring out how it fits in your lifestyle. And just like you're saying, I think it's so similar to alcohol again in that way of that it's so woven into our society and everything that we do. And it is this form of connection and bonding. I mean, it's everything. And I know I watch my mom with my niece and nephew who are, you know, little bitty. And as soon as they walk in the house, it's just immediately, do you want some cookies? Do you want some this? Do you want some that? And I'm like, stop with the sugar. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not create little sugar people.
that's sugar is love, right?
But sugar is love. It's so true. And we view alcohol so much the same way. It is, it's connection and bonding and camaraderie and fun and
all ceremony. It's all ceremony, you know, it's all an ingrained ceremonial process that it makes you feel the event feel a little bit more elevated, right? It's like you're less stressed. You know, get with the family, there's a little bit sometimes, I don't know about your family, but there's a little bit of stress, right? And it just makes you feel a little bit better, a little bit more relaxed. I literally believe it's a perfect anti-stress drug. Problem is that it turns on you at some point, and then you're just trying to fight off withdrawals, you know, like any drug.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And this is something I've noticed too in my own journey, right? With all foods, but a lot sugar. Once I eat some, right? That, as we say in 12-step world, the phenomenon of craving kicks in.
Sure.
And that is a very powerful tool for me also, because I think about, I had this shift in mindset around this probably a couple of years ago now, in that, in recognizing how sugar makes me feel after, right? Kind of the aftermath. And it immediately makes me tired. I mean, within 20 minutes, I need to go lay down and take a nap. You know, it just drains my energy. And then usually I'll have, you know, guilt will kick in at some point later that day. And it kind of messes with my mood. You know, sugar makes me sad.
Absolutely.
And so I think about that stuff right when I think, oh, because I love gummy everything. Ice cream and gummy candy are like my nemesis. Mm-hmm. And I'll start rationalizing in my head all the reasons it's okay to get a bag of gummy bears. And I stop and I go, okay, wait a minute. How's this going to be the rest of the day? Like, I don't have time to feel bad. I don't have time for a nap. Like, it's just, I have to wait, you know, but that's a really good deterrent oftentimes. And thinking about the mood part of it and that craving part, that it's just not worth it. You know, like, it's just not worth it to even start.
Oh, I mean, you're doing the whole recovery thing, you know, think it all the way through to the end. And I have the exact same reaction. Like in the last 30 years, I've had probably had 10 or 15 accidental ingestations, meaning like somebody swore there's no sugar in the salad dressing or whatever. And I'm like, when it happens, I have this like 2-martini buzz, right? I'm like lit up like a Christmas tree. The conversation's better or whatever. And I have learned to go with that 20 or 30 minutes, right? Because I know what's coming, which is at the end of that meal, I'm still going to be starving. I'm going to be hungry at the end of a beautiful meal with this, whatever, beautiful conversation. Then I'm going to start nodding before I'm on the way home, maybe in the car. And then the next day, I'm going to be blue. I'm going to be sad, or I'm going to need a nap later if it's at lunchtime. You know what I mean? It's like the exact process as you described, I go through. Exactly.
And, okay, but that sad thing is true.
Oh, 100%.
And that's here's the thing. Is that real or is that just me?
No, here's the thing. And this is important. It's important in the recovery. It's important in the withdrawals. It's important in the process, is that it's not you. It's not your mental state. It's actually a physical manifestation of a pounding of the dopamine. So you're getting an over-exaggerated release of dopamine and serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA. Your brain chemicals are just pounded manually, physically. You didn't go for a walk. You didn't have sex. You didn't have a hug. You didn't go to yoga. You pounded them manually with a substance, and you pushed them all out. And you overdosed, basically. And then all of a sudden, you don't have them to be even. And so now you've got to wait till they almost catch up again. You know, then you got to get a good night's sleep. You got to hydrate. You got to get some good food. And sometimes it even takes 24 hours. And that's if you're very healthy. If you come into sugar recovery with like a big badass habit, you're like that for weeks. You're not feeling good. You're depressed for weeks. It takes a while to get back. It's like pause. I'm sure you've heard of it. I'm sure you've talked about it. It's a true acute withdrawal symptom of sugar and caffeine that lasts for sometimes longer than 30 or 60 days. It takes a while to come back.
So it's anhedonia, just like we talk about.
100%.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I thought I was just being dramatic.
No. And a lot of people think it's guilt. They think that it's they weren't strong enough. They weren't successful, especially people that don't have a recovery background. Like, they're like, oh, I must screw up. I can't stay absent. I can't stay off the flower. And they actually think that feeling you got is guilt. Like they're like guilty, but it's not. It's an actual physical downturn because you just pushed manually all of your feel goods, and you felt good, pretty good for, you know, and the good of sugar is not like a high of cocaine or, you know, whatever. It's like, you just feel right with the world for a little bit, for 30 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever you're doing is better. The little relation, you know, your lunch or your whatever it is you're doing, you just feel this is. And then all of a sudden it starts to go downhill really fast. And you're like, what the hell just happened? I was feeling great.
I don't have so much of the guilt at this stage of the game, because I've been working on my whole food thing in general for a long time. And mm-hmm. now I'm disciplined enough that if I do have something sugar, like I'm pretty okay with it, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty good with my rules and managing that. So
yeah.
I decide to have it. It's a big thought process, and I give myself that permission. So I don't have a ton of that. Now, if I go crazy and have something 2, 3, 4 days in a row, then I will definitely start to have that guilt. Like, oh my gosh, what is happening? What the heck are you doing? This is mm-hmm. not how you want to live. This isn't how you want to feel. It's not who you want to be. And I have to go through all that stuff. But yeah, it's been an incredible journey. And I see people in my Facebook group all the time commenting about, you know, going to 12-step meetings, and there always being donuts and cookies. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, somebody will pop in and be like, I'm 3 days sober, and what the heck is going on with all this craving for sugar? It's all I'm thinking about is sugar. I'm doing nothing but eating sugar. And I'm like, well, that's the least of your worries right now. Just get through the alcohol part and be okay.
It's a step down. It's substance use. It's a harm reduction. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with harm reduction. It really is. And it's twice in the big book, you know, that sugar is a good substitute, right? And it is. And that's what people turn to. But then that'll turn on you, right? And the same thing, exactly the process that you're describing for yourself personally is what we advocate in a way. You know, like it would be nice if everybody walked in and never had sugar again, but that's not realistic, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was an abstinence-based guy for my whole recovery until the opioid crisis came along. And I realized you had to be freaking alive to recover. So I loosened up on Suboxone, those kind of things. And the same thing here, look, you've gone through however many years you've been thinking about it seriously and you've had some whatever, but you've healed each time. So you've literally practiced harm reduction in your pursuit to be healthier mentally and physically. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's evolving for me and our work that may need to happen in order to bring this to a larger audience. Cause I get a lot of pushback even from recovery people that 100% abstinence is a possibility in their life in the early days, right? But what is the goal of harm reduction, right? The goal of harm reduction is eventual abstinence if you can get there, if you want to get there, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the trajectory that we're taking, and it's okay. And we have to be the ones who give that permission, because people have tried this 100% shit. It don't work. It's what's just too hard in society, physically, whatever, in their family. Oftentimes they're the only person in the family who's going on this venture. And sometimes, you know, most of it's strangely enough women, because they're probably smarter, but you know, they're cooking and they're buying for the kids and the husband, and the husband's not on board and the kids aren't on board. So it's a little kind of a lonely situation if you don't have support.
Same thing with alcohol. Yeah. So often, and even an extended family, you know, I mean, it's not like you're going to all of a sudden have a sugar-free Christmas and everybody's going to show up, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Throw a sugar-free party and nobody shows up. Nobody. Or an alcohol-free one. Nobody shows up.
It is. So yeah, it is hard. It is a journey. I know one thing that has helped me a lot in since I've been sober from alcohol, right? And struggling with all the other addictions, because I have most of them.
That makes two of us.
Yeah, just figuring them all out. I know what has really helped is once I shifted my intent, right? Once everything wasn't about losing weight, are all about how I looked. When my intent shifted to really being a healthier human and wanting to be better to my body and make a true lifestyle change for the long term, it wasn't all those short-term goals, right? Mm. It shifted my perspective and my mindset in a way that's just completely different than it has ever been before.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And it's wise, you know. I think that, you know, as I relate it to sugar, it's like the addiction to dieting. You know, the it's like this is not a short term fix. You can't fix it in the short term. And you have to have your eye on the long term. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because I want it to be sustainable. You know, nothing is worse than the yo-yo thing. I don't want to be trapped in a yo-yo thing with anything in my life, right? Like, I want to be able to conquer things and move on to the next thing instead of just being constantly up and down and stuck in that discomfort. And that's probably really what it is. My listeners laugh at me because I talk about intrinsically, I'm really lazy. And I do a lot of stuff and accomplish a lot in a day, but intrinsically I'm a lazy person and I do not have the energy to be uncomfortable all the damn time. So when I have an issue, I got to figure out the solution and move on because I just don't, I'm too lazy to be unhappy.
I can recommend a couple of things. One, you should listen to a podcast. It's going to sunset, but there's a lot of episodes called The Joy of Procrastination. And then procrastination very simply says that if you're feeling lazy, procrastinating about the recovery world, you hear it a lot in marijuana use is this amotivational syndrome. And sugar literally causes amotivational syndrome. And they talk about it, but it doesn't get much press even in the marijuana world anymore. But the sugar definitely causes amotivational syndrome because you can get the benefits of a walk. You can get the benefits of a run or a yoga class by just eating something. You can get the dopamine push, but then you don't have a motivation. You know, you can't get up off the couch. So it's like, it really is. I wouldn't worry about it being intrinsically lazy because I understand it. It makes perfect sense to me. And one of the things I like to say, this is a little off topic, but as human beings, as animals, as mammals, we have three edicts, and that is food, sex, and conservation of energy, right? Conservation of energy is like one of the main tenets of any animal in the animal kingdom, right? And this work ethic BS is something that was learned. It's probably a process addiction of some sort, like work addiction, like work addiction, right? It's probably it's a human construct that is not like akin to our act. And I think maybe what is happening is you are becoming more in tune with the person you were supposed to be than the person that society was trying to make you. So just my two cents. But.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, you know, because I get really mad at things like the dishwasher. This is another one my listeners love to tease me about because I hate that damn dishwasher because it never goes away. You just have to do it all the time. And I want it to go away. And that's my little laziness, right? Because I'm so frustrated with it. And it's like, Angela, it takes 4 freaking minutes, dude, just do it. It is so not a big deal, but I get so mad about it because I just don't want to.
We're on the same page with that one. We're on the same page with that one. And I have learned that the discipline of almost kind of a Zen, like chop wood, carry water thing, this, you get more freedom when you like lean into those small disciplines. It's weird, but believe me, I'm the worst at that. That's only intellectual. I don't have that emotionally yet. that's only from reading. If I could tell you I was practicing, it'd be a different story. I still hate the dishwasher.
It is fantastic. I love what you just said about the freedom of it because it's so true, just like the freedom of sobriety, right? If I would have had any idea how much easier it was to just not drink, I would have done it 100 years earlier, right? I just had no idea how much more simple my life would become and how drama-free, right? Because then I got to learn how to make better choices and pick people better to be in my life. And it gets very drama-free and really nice.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And it's just that one thing of abstinence that changes a lot. And it's the same, all those little disciplines, you know, whatever they are.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about sugaraddiction.com and what happens there.
So sugaraddiction.com really is a community more than anything. And we do have information and we have challenges and quizzes and all that kind of good stuff. But you know, we have Facebook groups and we have all that kind of stuff. And it's really about early adopters, if you, I call them canaries in the coal mine, people who are interested and would be still listening at this point on a podcast like this, they're interested in possibly joining a crowd of people who have kind of decided, at least I call it a scratch test, Angela. It's like, you know, if you went to the allergist, they'd scratch you for pollen and ragweed and grass stain and all that other stuff. Well, you're doing your own scratch test by giving yourself, you're adulting into 90 days of sugar freedom. Just check it out. And then if you want to go back, just do one thing at a time, like split test one thing at a time. Just try some monk fruit or try some whatever, some coconut flour, whatever it is, you know. But it's a process where you're not alone. You know, you've got people that are doing it with you. They understand that, you know, you've decided this too for your life, whatever it's, maybe it's weight, maybe it's brain health, maybe it's diabetes, whatever. And as I said, I gave away the best information on the planet for 7 years, and a few people took it and ran with it. But 3 years ago, when we started doing groups and meetings and all that kind of stuff, and had built a culture around people who don't use sugar, they're not normally in their family, they're not normally in their community, so they got to do it online. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
I love that. That's good. Good stuff. And sugaraddiction.com, can people find your Facebook group by the same name if they go on Facebook and search?
We have a page for Sugar Addiction. That'll lead you there. And then we come up first on Google, no matter what you do. I mean, not Google almost, but Facebook for sure.
Okay.
If you type it in.
So. Just type in sugar addiction.
Or sugar detox, yeah.
And I will link that in the show notes for everybody too, so you know how to find Mike.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some fun stuff together in early 2021. I'm going to jump in one of these challenges and check it out and make that commitment.
Nice. That's awesome.
I'm going to get a bunch of my listeners to do it with me. So it'll be fun. We're going to finalize those details.
Nice. The challenge is fun. It's 30 days of me coming into your inbox with a little reminder. And then you're obviously in the, you know, there's an elevated platform. Obviously, you've got Zoom meetings and private forums, you know, that's not Facebook, that kind of stuff. So, and people just, they just think surveys and everything, they needed the accountability, they needed the support, they needed the camaraderie, and that's what turned the tide for them. So yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on here and doing this with me. I'm going to ask my last question, favorite question.
Okay.
And I'm going to shift it a little bit for you. What is your favorite thing about being a sugar-free person?
Oh, what a great question. I never got that one before. It's the mental freedom. It's the mental clarity, if you will. One of the main ingredients is the main benefits is your brain fog clears up. And I watched my mom die of Alzheimer's, my father too, but my mother, like, was a real sugar junkie. And I watched the ending years, and I've seen all the research. And I've studied all the brain guys, and by accident, our little summit that's coming up is turning into this brain science. Even all the hard-ass coaches are talking about it, right? The hard-ass coaches are, you know, like saying, that's my brain. Anyway, I have all my fun in my brain. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just love to play with ideas, and I love to play with, you know, I like to talk to smart people like you and people on the summit and stuff. And so my mother was a brilliant woman, and to watch her like deteriorate that way and to know now that there may be a correlation, I just don't want to take that risk.
Right.
You know, it wasn't weight, it wasn't health, it wasn't diabetes, it was, you know, mental and clarity. So, and brain health. So that's what I like about it.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And for everybody out there, I will link all the things to find Mike in the show notes, and you can get all that good information. You know where to find me. And I hope you're having a fantastic day. I'll see you next week.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast, candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.